Welcome to this podcast focusing on assessing cardiovascular risk for primary prevention. In other words, in patients with no evidence of established cardiovascular disease, no history of heart attack, stroke, TIA, angina, or peripheral vascular disease. Because, of course, patients with these comorbidities are automatically at high cardiovascular risk. And we'll also highlight the difference between Q-Risk 2 and the more updated risk assessment tool, Q-Risk 3. So the Q-Risk tools calculate a person's risk of developing a heart attack or stroke over the next 10 years. It essentially presents the average risk of people with the same risk factors as those entered for that person. And the algorithm has been very carefully developed by doctors and academics working in the UK National Health Service and is based on routinely collected data from many thousands of GPs across the country who have contributed freely to the Q Research database. So it's essentially been developed specifically for a UK population and intended therefore for use in the UK by healthcare professionals. And Q-Risk was recently updated using data gathered from over 1,300 GP practices across England, and that essentially included data from 981 practices to develop the actual scores, and a separate set of 328 practices were used to validate those scores. So data from a total of just under 8 million patients aged between 25 to 84 years were used in the derivation cohort, and data from 2.7 million patients were used in the validation cohort. All patients were free of known cardiovascular disease and, importantly, not prescribed statins at baseline. So essentially, what has changed in Q-Risk 3? So first, let's remind ourselves of what is included in Q-Risk 2, which is validated for patients aged between 25 and 84. So the factors that influence your Q-Risk 2 score include ethnicity, deprivation as measured by the Townsend score, which is derived from postcode, systolic blood pressure, body mass index, the total cholesterol to HDL ratio, smoking history, a family history of early coronary disease, as indicated by a first degree relative age less than 60, type 1 or type 2 diabetes, treated hypertension, rheumatoid arthritis, because we know any inflammatory state can really increase the progression of the atherosclerotic trajectory, atrial fibrillation, and chronic kidney disease stages 4 or 5. And we've come to know much more recently, actually, that CKD is much more of an influential cardiovascular risk factor than previously thought. So Q-Risk 3 includes all of those risk factors, but also additional risk factors have been identified to help enable healthcare professionals to identify more accurately those at most risk of heart disease and stroke. So in Q-Risk 3, it also factors in chronic kidney disease stages 3 as well as 4 or 5, with that knowledge that even early chronic kidney disease represents a significant increased cardiovascular risk. It's an independent cardiovascular risk factor. It also includes, interestingly, systolic blood pressure variability, because we have actually known for some time that patients whose blood pressure is labile are at increased cardiovascular risk. Patients with a history of migraine, we know there is an increased vascular risk in those patients, as well as, of course, patients with a history of corticosteroid use, which is also not coincidentally linked with risk of metabolic syndrome. As I said earlier, all inflammatory conditions will cause endothelial dysfunction, which propagates the progression of atherosclerosis. So also included now is a very inflammatory autoimmune condition of systemic lupus erythematosus. Atypical antipsychotic usage, we know, again, is associated with development of metabolic syndrome and increased cardiovascular risk. So that's now included, as is severe mental illness, another independent cardiovascular risk factor. And I think about time, erectile dysfunction was also included in Q-risk. We know that particular vascular causes of erectile dysfunction are strongly associated with advanced atherosclerosis. I mean, essentially, if you've got significant atherosclerosis in your penile artery causing erectile dysfunction, it is highly likely that you've got significant atherosclerosis in your coronary and cerebrovascular arteries. Patients with HIV or AIDS, we know, in fact, we've known for some time, are at increased cardiovascular risk, not just because of the condition and probably associated inflammation, but also because of the medications that these patients are on can be pro-atherosclerotic. So overall, these new added risk factors within Q-risk 3 were found to increase risk by about 10%. And anyone can use the Q-risk 3 calculator online. I'd encourage all of you to use this. It's very easy to find just by Googling Q-risk 3, with the website being qrisk.org/3. I just wanted to touch on a very interesting article published in the Heart Journal 2023, so last year. There was an independent external validation of the Q-risk 3 cardiovascular disease risk prediction model using UK Biobank data. So really interesting. So data were used from the UK Biobank, which is a large-scale prospective cohort study of over 400,000 participants aged between 40 and 69. They were recruited between 2006 and 2010 in the UK. And importantly included participants with no previous history of cardiovascular disease or statin treatment, and the defined outcome being the first occurrence of coronary heart disease, ischemic stroke, or transient ischemic attack derived from linked hospital inpatient records and death registrations. The study population included a significant cohort of around 230,000 women and 170,000 men with over 20,000 incident cardiovascular events, so a lot of data. And ultimately, it was found that overall, Q-risk 3 had reasonable, in a moderate discrimination for UK Biobank participants, but discrimination declined quite significantly by age, to the extent that Q-risk 3 systematically seemed to overpredict cardiovascular risk in that UK Biobank data set in older participants by as much as 20%. So certainly something to maybe factor into our clinical practice and maybe rein us in a bit by stopping us over-treating older patients. So essentially, Q-risk 3 had a reasonable overall correlation and discrimination for UK Biobank participants. However, the accuracy of the model, I think it's important to be aware, did decline for older participants. And also the other thing to note is that the prediction seemed to be more accurate for female patients. So Q-risk 3, as with any risk assessment tool, does have limitations that we must be aware of. And therefore, I think we must just use Q-risk not as an absolute, but as a guide. I mean, from my perspective, the cutoff, for instance, for family history of early cardiovascular disease should actually be higher for women. We know anyone with a female first-degree relative with early cardiovascular disease below the age of 65, that's significant and likely to represent a significant genetic predisposition within that family to accelerated atherosclerosis, so something I certainly factor in. We also know that Q-risk 3 doesn't factor in other important cardiovascular risk factors, such as albumin-creatinine ratio. I mean, if that's elevated, particularly in patients with diabetes, we know that is a hugely influential cardiovascular risk factor. It also doesn't factor in waist circumference, understandably, because waist is often not documented in the notes, so it's difficult to get that data set validated. But waist circumference, we know, is a wonderful marker for visceral fat. And visceral fat not only influences your risk of getting the metabolic syndrome, but also hugely influences cardiovascular risk, particularly, I think, in patients who have a normal BMI, because that would sort of underperceive the risk with Q risk. But if you've got normal BMI with a high waist, very common in certain ethnicities, particularly South Asian ethnicities, that additional risk factor would be missed by current Q risk assessment. Q risk also doesn't factor in how long someone's had diabetes. You know, and there is a world of difference from a cardiovascular perspective if you develop diabetes at the age of 60 versus the age of 40. And simply doing Q risk in that patient at 60 would not factor that in. And that is, I think, a really important consideration that we need to be aware of when we're looking at someone's Q risk. It can also potentially make you underperceive risk in younger patients, because remember, it's only really looking at 10-year risk, when their lifetime risk could be much more significant in these patients. And so I think relative risk and heart age are very helpful metrics to address this, and available when you do the Q-Risk 3 assessment online. So I think overall Q-Risk 3 is a helpful tool to offer a guide to cardiovascular risk, but we mustn't use it as an absolute. But probably more importantly, it's a very useful tool to foster informed discussions with our patients in relation to cardiovascular prevention strategies. But certainly there are caveats and limitations that we should be aware of. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast.